Our main speaker tonight is Abe E. He's our guest from Sherman Oaks. He's got 41 years in the program. And since he's got such an incredible story, I think I'll just let him tell you it himself. Welcome, Abe.
Tell me, I gotta be careful here. They're gonna tape me so I can go to jail good. Good evening, my name is Abe. Thank you for all being here, because you see, I learned something a long time ago. If you weren't here, I couldn't be here. So thank you for being here. This is how that program works. When two people gather together in your name, there you'll be in the midst. And I've never seen it fail. Never seen it fail. Yes, I think I am the luckiest person in AA now. When I came in 1946, there was only 10 groups of AA or 400 people west of Chicago, right in Los Angeles. I'm going to tell you people in my own mind. If it wasn't for a non-alcoholic, we wouldn't have AA today. It was a non-alcoholic by the name of Kay Miller that brought the first group of AA to California in Los Angeles. First one. So any time an alcoholic gets around and say, if it wasn't for us, you wouldn't be sober today. See, I got something on him. I know that, see. But it takes time. When I came in 1947, after we'd been in a year, a man wanted to give us $10,000. It was a big executive at Universal Studios. I got to give you a little history before I go into this program. We couldn't take it, because we can't accept contributions. Today, at the most, you can donate to here, Al-Anon is $500. So we figured out if we could sell sobriety bonds for $10 a piece. So everybody in the group, which was about 200 of us, we all bought sobriety bonds. He bought $10,000. We bought this clubhouse. The first clubhouse in the United States that is owned outright. It's not like an alarm club where you still have to pay dues to belong to it. This is owned outright. And it is a group. So they had a Wednesday night open, and we asked them, there was eight of us, and we asked them if we could start a non-alcoholic family group. They said yes. We took the big book of A, and we worked it just like they did. We passed the basket, turned the money in. And about 8 years later, Al-Anon came in. See, in them days, the first half hour they let us sit in a meeting room, and then they kick us in the kitchen. And they say to us, make the coffee, serve the donuts, sweep the floor, and get out of our way. And I can understand that now. You see, this is the first time an alcoholic could say he belonged to something. It was his. And he didn't want to share it with anybody else. And I can understand that. But it was like sewing circles. All we could do was talk like this, yak, yak, about our husbands and wives. That drove me nuts. Because, you see, I'm lucky. When I walked into that first meeting, AA meeting with my wife, I knew I was home. And I wanted what they had, and I didn't give a damn how I was going to get it. And if you don't think they were rough to us non-alcoholics, you're crazy. It's a Christmas tree today. Because 80% do not recognize it's a family disease. And when Al-Anon come in, since we knew it had to be self-supporting by our own contribution, we had to move away from the clubhouse, because all the money that went to that clubhouse went to the club. So we moved out and started an Al-Anon group at that time. But I had a good foothold. And I'm grateful for the alcoholics, because after 5 years, my wife, in them days, if you were an alcoholic, you could get a birthday cake if you didn't take a drink. She went to drugs, they didn't accept that. She still got a birthday cake in 5 years. Finally, she took too many drugs, put herself to death in the house with it. But those people in AA at the time taught me a great gift. And I had to give her the dignity to destroy herself. That's what she wanted to do. I didn't get her drunk, and I didn't get her sober, so I cannot accept the guilt. And everybody in this room, don't you ever accept the guilt. You're alcoholic or any other human being. And they said, well, why not? I said, did you get your husband sober? She said, no. Did you get him drunk? She said, no. And I said, why in the hell are you accepting the blame? But you see, the alcoholic was smart. He come home guilty. And he'd start a fight with you. And pretty soon he'd say, see, it wasn't for you, I couldn't have him, wouldn't get drunk. And pretty soon you start to believe it. And they taught me the 12 steps. And those 12 steps are the most important part of this program. I would like to make a suggestion to all of you if you want to try it. Because you see, you hear the steps and you hear the traditions. You hear them, but you really don't pay attention because whoever comes up here to read and reads them so fast to get off the podium. Try it. You'll be surprised. For 30 days, read the steps to yourself slowly out loud. And after 30 days, read the 12 traditions slowly to yourself out loud. And I'll make you a promise that after 60 days, you'll start to get a concept of what those traditions and steps mean to you. Then you really start to know what the program is about. And like everything else, it takes time. See, when I came in, they told me it was a twofold disease, an allergy of the body coupled with obsession of mind. They told me this allergy of the body that no human power on earth can do anything about this physical allergy. Now, if this is true, and it's been proven for 50 years in AA to be true, strange as it may seem, it's not even the alcoholic's problem. I don't mean you don't have the disease. What is the problem? It's the stinking thinking that causes drinking. It's the stinking thinking that brought me here. If it was physical, I couldn't work this program. I'm not an alcoholic. So what I feel we are both seeking is spiritual and mental sobriety. Physical, we can't do anything about. Now, when both of us, 80 and Alan, can accept the fact that there's nothing we can do about this disease, we're on the road to recovery. And we're willing to accept we can't do anything about it. And it takes time. One of the great things I learned, the first thing I ever heard on an AA meeting, and I've never forgotten it, for 41 years. The guy got up and says, I love everybody. I don't have to kiss them. And that's the truth. You know, just because we're now on AA, you know, we don't mean there's a lot of people I don't get along with in this program. They don't get along with me. Nothing I can do about it. And it takes time. This program does not promise you a rose garden. When you come through these doors, we plant the seed, and we cover it with the bullshit you hear. But where else can I go and get it out and know that everybody in the room understands? They're not going to condemn me. Oh, what a relief that is. You see, I lied so much that I believed my own lies, and I think we all did. And I come here, and I gave the same bullshit they did. And pretty soon I recognized that I was lying to me, never knowing it. And as I'm standing here, I can't lie to me anymore. I'm listening to me talk just like you are. I can't afford to lie to Amy anymore. Because I'm the guy that has to live with you. You ever notice, think of something? I'm the only person that lives with me 24 hours a day. You see me for an hour. My wife's lucky to see me 3 hours. You know. Now, if I'm the only guy that has to live with me 24 hours a day, why don't start looking at me? Because I'm the only guy that has to put up with it. And you think it's fun living with yourself? Smooth, Baba. Not me. I want to look at you. And we do not belong to AA or Al-Anon. None of us do. If we did, we'd have to have a boss. We'd have to have kings or bosses or executives. I belong to a fellowship, a group of people gathered together with one common bond, the disease of alcoholism. That's the only thing that holds us together. This is the only program that tells me that you in this room right now are my strength. Without you, I can't do it. I don't care what you say. But at the same time, you give me the freedom to be me. You realize what a gift that is? They give you the freedom to be you. But we need each other. Tradition tells you that. Our common welfare comes first. Personal progress depends upon unity of both of us. We need each other, no matter how you look at it. I need everybody in this world. But I don't have to kiss them. You know, the guy that hates me or cusses me out is just as interested in me as the one that loves me because I bother him. Yeah. You know who I'm scared of? The guy that don't give a damn one way or the other. One of the first things I learned was a serenity prayer. It says, God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change. And we all say that we can't change people, places, and things, and that is true. I forgot one thing. I happen to be people. I can't change AB. You know what my problem was? I'm all right. All the rest of you out there are wrong. And here it says you accept yourself as you are. See? And that was very important to me. And it says, give me the courage to change the things I can. The only thing I can change is my attitude towards AB. Instead of saying I'm a dirty old man, I say I'm a sexy senior citizen. Nothing changed. Nothing changed. You think I ain't the same old bastard I was 40 years ago? You're crazy. The only difference is I'm aware of it now. That gives me a chance to do something about it. But in that understanding is the wisdom to know the difference. I cannot blame another human being for my actions anymore. Not one person. Just like, for instance, about a year ago, I bought a car from a friend of mine who's always got me good deals. This time he screwed me. Right? The guy said, why don't you go over there and jump him about it? I said, no. He said, why? I said, I made the last decision. I made the decision to buy it. He didn't stick a gun in my rib. I'm the guy that's to blame for buying it, not him. You see, we get how quick we want to blame somebody else. Why, we learned when we were kids. You ever see your kids? You ask them why I did it? Not me, Johnny did it. Never them wrong. I go out and I'll see my wife's grandkids. I raise them for them. When I walk in the door, they're conniving. I want, I want, I want. See, we come in here, we're like little kids. It's going to take 5 years for us to grow up a little bit. First year you come in, you're helpless. We take care of you just like a little baby. Second year, the little baby learns to walk and he stumbles. We pick him up and he walks. Third year, the little baby likes to hear his own voice and yak, 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 yak. You ever watch your kids? Fourth year, the little baby wants to do it his way. He wants to learn. Fifth year, he gets a little bratty. You can't tell him nothing anymore. We got to go through that stage. Yes, we come with grown-up bodies, but we come with little kids. We brought all the little kids false with us. Every one of them. And we got to change it. About the seventh or eighth year, we finally dawned us we don't know a goddamn thing. Now we're so willing to sit back and listen. And what happens? By that time, the steps have become part of me without thinking. I automatically know when I screw up, I'm set to bring it back and focus again. And it takes time. When I talked about practicing a rose garden, he gives me 12 tools in that garden and he tells me I have to keep cultivating it the rest of my life because there's always weeds going to grow. But you will find your own rose garden. A man taught me that a long time ago. He says, Amy, I like to give you what I have, but I can't. You have a tool and you'll have to find it in your own time and your own way. But we'll all arrive at the same goal. Don't any of you try to work this program like somebody else. It'll never work. Do it your way. Do it the way it makes you comfortable. And you will arrive at the same goal. Believe me, you will. Sometimes we try to do what everybody else does and it won't work. I'm going to take you through the steps of how I understand. Not the way you understand, but the way I understand. And I didn't learn them overnight. First 3 steps, I'm going to find out who I was because I didn't know who I was. First step says I admitted I was powerless over alcohol, and that my life had become unmanageable. Did you hear what I said? My life. Right there and then it's telling me that the rest of my life they have to look at me. And that bottle whipped me when I finally realized that bottle whipped me and I never took a drink out of it. Is when I realized that my wife and I were both fighting a disease that neither one of us knew anything about. Now the minute I recognized that, I took the pressure off of her because now I knew that I was fighting a disease that she was fighting too that she knew nothing about because there's nobody can explain this disease. Nobody can explain it. You know, I've never seen an intellectual make this program. That's why they say keep it simple, stupid. There's a reason for it. If I ask everybody in this room what a feline creature is, you can imagine how many in the feline family you could name me. But I don't care how dumb, how stupid, or how miserable you are. If I ask you what a cat is, you know what I'm talking about. That's how simple we have to keep it. I know what I'm talking about. But how can I transpose it so you understand it? I saw two beautiful women talk here today. And you know what I had to do? I had to put me back in the age they were and what I did and how I acted to make me understand. And they gave me two choices in that first step. Accept or reject. I accepted to stay with my wife. I made that decision. That meant I had to accept all the consequences that went with it, which meant she destroyed herself. But if I reject, I have to walk away. But you know what most of us do? You reject, and you say, well, maybe I can still help. Maybe I can still help. And wonder why you're still problems, you know. Did any of you ever get in trouble minding your own business? The old man told me a long time ago, he says, my son, everybody in this world are my kids. I have no grandchildren. And I'm going to take care of them. And I don't want you or anybody else to help. And anytime you do, I'm going to knock you on your fanny, and he does. And this is a selfish program. But it's a different kind of a selfish you'll ever experience in your life. By becoming selfish, the second step says, I have to believe in something. Came to believe that a greater than myself would restore me to sanity. It says sanity. It didn't say insane. There's no place that says insane. You know an insane person is the happiest person in the world. He can be King George VIII, Bonaparte tomorrow, and Queen Elizabeth the next day. He's completely happy. But I've done insane things. What is a normal person? To me, a normal person is a person that's 51% good and 49% bad, and 51% bad and 49% good. And I came to believe that this power could help me maintain this balance of good and bad. I can live a normal life. When do I get abnormal? When I get goody goody or batty batty? This is when I realized how sick I was. When my wife was drunk down here, I was holier than thou, pin people patting on the back, you poor little guy, and I'm loving every minute of it. And that's self pity. Not knowing that I was just as sick as she was. And I'll tell you another thing. If you weren't sick in Al-Anon, you wouldn't have married an alcoholic to start with. And I'll prove it. They'll divorce an alcoholic, and 6 months later, they're married to another one. And then they say they're well. Boy, we walk in traps. We look for trouble, we get it. Tell you something about the steps. You know, we all worry about the fourth and fifth step in inventory. You know that if you took the first step honestly and sincerely, oh, thank you, I need it. See? If you took that first step honestly and sincerely, you've already taken, start to take your inventory. Because if this isn't true, why is it at the 12 steps it says having had a spiritual awakening as a result of all these steps, not just the fourth and fifth? But not us, we're worried. We want to come in here and get right, and we're going to go from a bad boy to a big boy. And the program doesn't say that. It says 180 degree turn, not 360. It says that balance again that I'm talking about. This whole program is based on balance. I came here with a disorganized mind, and you taught me discipline to be able to live a normal life. I go to a meeting now to learn how to protect A.B. from A.B. I can handle you. It's me and my dirty, stinking mind I gotta be on guard for all the time, and it's there, going away. An alcoholic gets sober. If he's a mean alcoholic when he was drunk, he's gonna be a mean bastard when he's sober. He only got it sober. There's three kinds of people on this program. And I'm going to learn how to live this life because of that. Because it's out there in that big world, but it was so big I couldn't see it. Those who believe in God, those who believe in God, and those who think they're God. They're the most dangerous people in this world, the self-righteous ones. Man, they got us so scared to do anything. I can't go to the bathroom without being cancer or something. I can't eat anything without it's going to kill me. I've been smoking since I was 7 years old. It's 73 years. I'm 80 years old now. My wife quit smoking for 3 years now. She drives me nuts. Watch her when I'm smoking. You're smoking too much. I said, get away from me. Now I came to believe, and our third step says I had to make a decision. Made a decision to turn my will and my life over the care of God as we understood him. Religion is only man's interpretation of God, and this is the only program that gave me the right to interpret my way. Oh, what a relief that was. I don't have to do it the way my church told me, not the way my mother, not the way my dad, not the way the school. My way. And I can prove that to you. I can take anything out of the Bible right now and give it to 1,000 preachers, and I'll guarantee you next Sunday I'll get 1,000 different interpretations. So he says, do it your way. But I couldn't understand why God didn't love me like he did his other children. And I have a little card at home. It used to be on the Santa Ana Freeway for 25 years on a big billboard. There was a picture of Christ standing on one side of the door and say I was on the other. And all of a sudden I noticed one thing. There was no doorknob on his side. My son, when are you going to open the door to your heart and let me come through? I've been standing here all the time. You see, I was raised, and I think all of us, a punishing God. I can remember when I was a kid, no matter what I did, God's going to punish you. God's going to punish you. Geez, every time I did something, I'd say, God's going to punish me. See, you're a bad boy. And I believed it. And here I come to find out that's the only friend I have in this world. He's the only one that loves me at all times. He's the only one that's ever forgiven me for everything I've ever done. He's the only one that understands me, and the only one that spanks me when I need spanking. Geez, how much more can I ask? And there's no place in the 12 steps that tells me I have to come to you. The only place in the 12 steps that says I have to come to that man upstairs. No place else. No place in the 12 steps. So here I found out that I was one of God's kids. He loved me and he cared for me. Jesus, I finally got an identification. And then I got a group of people that love me and care for me and willing to help me. Now I got an idea of what I'm like. The fourth to the ninth step are the forgiveness steps. I'm going to find out what I'm like so that I can forgive Amy for all the things I did to me that I've been blaming you for. Fourth step says made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. A lot of people try to associate that with the tenth, which means personal. It does not. It says moral. And they told me to write my defects of character down. And I wrote all my defects of character down. Hate, frustration, jealousy, resentment, fears, insecurity, every one of those. And I looked at them and all of a sudden I realized something. Everybody in this world had the same defects of character I had. What a relief that was. And I could come here and blow my top and know that you understand. If you didn't understand, how in the hell do you know what I'm talking about? But you know what else what I found out about those defects? That's my ego. You look back at every tantrum you went into, or aggravation or hurts or grief, it's because people, places, and things aren't doing it your way. This guy taught me that years ago. One day I'm blowing my top at the club. He says, come over here. He said, go home and ask yourself, why are you upset? They caused it, but why are you upset? And I realized it was because people, places, and things were doing it my way. And then I realized that was my ego. We're all self-centered asses. We're all bossy people. We're never going to change. The only thing is I got to do it with temperance. Now, see, the fourth and fifth step were one step and the eighth and ninth and one. The reason they did that is because they didn't want to make it the Ten Commandments. Though it is the Ten Commandments, sugar-coated for you and I to understand. There's nothing on this program, not one of you people in this room, haven't known all your life. This is the only program that taught you how to apply what you've known all your life. Shakespeare says, unto thyself be true. Gee, that's great, but I never knew what hell it meant. Now I do. Be honest with you. Not with you, but me. See, I don't know how to be honest. I really don't. The only time I know I'm honest is when I'm admitting I'm dishonest. See? But I used to be so dishonest, I believe my dishonesty. So they told me to be sure in that fifth step that I admit to God, to myself, and to another human being the exact natures of my wrongs. This step, they say, be very careful with. Be sure you pick somebody you can really trust before you talk to them about your innermost feelings. Because if I told all you people right now my innermost feelings, I'll guarantee one of you is going to talk. You think it won't? We got more gossips than A and L than you'll ever find any place else. We've got more psychiatrists and psychologists than you'll find any place else. They're on the program 6 months or a year and they all become counselors. You sit there and I watch them and it's so funny. So they told me to admit to myself and to God and to another human being. Now, do you hear what I said? The first word says admit. You know that that's the only second time that's ever used in the 12 steps. First one says I admitted my life's a man. And here it says admit to God, to yourself, and to another human being the exact nature of your own. I knew what I did wrong, but I never knew why. So God has already forgiven me. So he don't care. He's just listening. He ain't paying attention. Person I'm talking to don't care. He understands. Who am I talking to? For the first time in my life, I'm listening to A.B. tell A.B. about the wrongs he committed, that now I found the cause. My defects of character, my ego. I never knew that. What a relief to know. See, as I'm talking to you now, that's the first time in my life I've ever listened to me tell A.B. about what's wrong with him. Honestly, listen to him. See, I can't afford to lie to me anymore. I can tell you a lie. As long as I don't believe it, it's all right. It's when I start to believe it. When I start to believe it, it gets me in trouble. See? So I've taken the first two steps in my inventory of forgiveness. The sixth step says I'm entirely ready to have God remove these defects of character. I call this my partner step. Is you and I partners, son? I said, yes, Pop. I talk to him like I talk to you. I'm not scared of him. I call him Pop. I don't care. I know it's there. I don't know what the hell it is, but it's all right with me. I know he's listening. So you want me to take care of your defects of character? I said, yeah, Pop. He said, since we're partners, what are you going to do? I said, I don't know. He said, well, think about it. And all of a sudden, I realized he wanted me to work on my good qualities. That's when I realized I can never correct a defect of character always worrying about it. Why do we tell you to pray for somebody or put a prayer in your mouth? Because the minute you do, you put a positive thought. You've eliminated the negative. It's like a girl got a divorce. You get a divorce, you pay the lawyer $1,000. She says, I can't understand the sixth step. You get a divorce, you pay the lawyer $1,000. I said, what are you worrying about it for? Did you pay him $1,000 for it? He said, yes. I said, what are you worrying about it for? If you don't want to give him $1,000 and let him worry about what you're about the divorce, you might as well take it back. You're going to worry on him, aren't you? Yeah. I said, what are you wasting $1,000 for? That's what the sixth step says. I'm entirely ready to have God removed. So I give it to him. He just wants me to work on my good qualities to the best of my ability. No guarantee. See, we all forget how to take care of anything. You ever stop and think that in spite of you, before you got here, that God's been taking care of you all these years? What the hell do you think's going to happen when you and him start working together? It's got to be 10 times better. Can't be anywhere. It's got to be better. I'm Lebanese, and we have an Arabic expression that goes through all the centuries. Allah would dub that, which means God will take care. With all that strife in Lebanon and all the countries over there, that'll always come up. God will take care. Isn't that what we say? There's nothing new. You know that the Lord's Prayer is the 12 steps? Our Father, the first step. Thy will be done, the third step. Give us this day our daily bread, one day at a time. Forgive our trespasses, we forgive those who trespass against us. The 8th and 9th step. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Amen. Isn't that the 6th step? See, there's nothing new. The only difference is they simplified it so I can understand it. It's like a friend of mine was talking one night at a meeting, and he was talking about empathy. When he got through after me, I said, why didn't you say love? He said, they know what I'm talking about. I said, there might be one person in this room who don't know what you're talking about. But anybody understand what you say when you say love? See, that's how simple I have to keep it. It makes the greatest amount of people understand what we're talking about. Like you heard me say earlier, I never saw an intellectual make this program. They didn't give this program to the smartest men in the world, the greatest scientists, or the doctors. I get a kick out of reading these papers, and all the doctors, I can tell you what an alcoholic is, or a drug addict. They don't know a goddamn thing about this anymore than I do. None of us in this program knows what the hell an alcoholic is. You know, I hear a lot of people now and I'm say, well, I think my family is an alcoholic when I come on this program. And I ask them a simple question. I said, did they admit they were an alcoholic? He said, no. I said, then you and I have no right to call him one. We have no right. And even an alcoholic won't call you an alcoholic until you raise your hand and admit it. See, I have no right to put that stigma on you until you put it yourself. And when we're in a meeting like this, or a discussion meeting, you know what the greatest gift they give us? They gave me a right to my opinion, and they gave you a right to yours. You gave me a right to listen to my bullshit, and I have to give you the right to listen to yours. But you see, my problem before I got here, I want you to listen to my crap, I ain't gonna listen to yours. You know, it's normal. Everybody in this room is right. Because what's right for you may be wrong for me and vice versa. So I can accept whatever you believe. That's right as far as I'm concerned. It's like when let's say I know one of you is hurting and I come by you and I know you're hurting. And I say, how do you feel? And you say, I feel all right. I know you're lying. I have to walk away. You did not give me permission to talk to you. And if you say, I'm hurt, Dave, and I say, do you want to talk? If you say yes, then you give me the right to tell you what I think. Until then, I have no right. But these self-righteous bastards walk in and say, I feel all right. You're lying. You're not working your program. Why don't you straighten yourself up? This is what you should do, and that's what you should do. Jesus Christ. I'm hurt. I don't want you to tell me what's wrong with me. I just want you to listen to me. Oh, you feel familiar, Al? You know, I've been there, honey. I've seen it. You know, I've heard 41 years, and I've heard the same bullshit then and I've heard tonight. It hasn't changed one goddamn bit. It hasn't changed, honest. It's like being a sponsor. I don't believe in the sponsor in that sense of the word. I don't want to lead you, and I don't want to push you. I want to walk beside you and your friend. Everybody in this room is my sponsor, and I'm your sponsor. Girl called me the other day, and I thought of it, said, Lori. I thought it was Lori that called me to come up here to speak. She said, no, this is Lori from Riverside Meeting. Can I talk to you? I said, yes. I don't know who that Lori is. That's the least of my worries. I know that if she called me, she had a problem. So I listened. When I got through, she finally calmed her down. Because when I'm emotionally upset, you are too. I can whip you. You've lost your reasoning power. And you don't want me to solve your problem. I don't want you to solve mine. I don't want nobody to tell me what's wrong with me. But show me. So after we calm the person down, you're listening to him, talking to him a little bit. Pretty soon you'll say to him, you just answered your own problem. They say, where? You show him. He says, I did, didn't I? Now he feels better. He didn't want me to answer it. Because if I answered it for him, I'm going to get the blame for it. That's why it's a suggestive program. If I advise you to do something, you don't take my advice, I'm going to get mad. If you do take my advice, it's going to be wrong, you're going to get mad, I'm going to get hurt. But if I suggest, I can't blame you, and you can't blame me, I just suggested it, I didn't tell you to do it. I got enough problems of my own, but I don't worry about yours. Now I found out what I was like. The seventh step is one of the most beautiful steps on this program. It's only one sentence. Humbly ask him to remove my shortcomings. What is my shortcomings? It was my inability to cope with my everyday problems. Now, if you don't think this is scary, when you finally know what you're like and what you did, and now you got six steps to straighten it out. Because here's where I'm asking him all over again, see you humble. You had to be humble to be teachable. First, you be humble yourself in the first step when you admitted you were wrong, you had a problem. Your life's unmanageable. People say, well, my life ain't unmanageable. I said, it isn't. Then what brought you here? Because I was trying to manage it so much and manage your life that I got unmanageable. So I'm asking you now to take me through the next six steps to help me understand how to live with these things that I finally found out about me. The eighth step says, make a list of all people you had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. And I did. I put one name there, Davy. I never harmed a stranger in my life. He kicked me right in the chin. Who did I harm? My loved ones and friends. And as I'm making amends to me, I'm making amends to them by becoming the person they've always wanted me to be. See, if you do not make amends to you first, you can never make amends to anybody else. See, until I learn to love Avi, I can never love you. Until I can communicate with me, I can't communicate with you. Until I understand me, I can't understand you. So it goes back to that little saying they have in AA, let it begin with me. Because if it don't begin with me, it won't work. And many people say, well, Avi, it says make amends to people. I said, well, I am people. The ninth step says make direct demands to such people wherever possible. Now, that's a different story. Except when to do so would injure them or others. And here's another step you got to be careful with. When they first wrote that step in, and they talked about rigorous honesty, man, they used to go crazy. See, it took 100 alcoholics to stay sober 4 years before 100 of them could stay sober 1 year before they wrote the book. So this guy walked up to another guy and he says, I slept with your wife 2 years ago and all hell broke loose. Here's where it says, except when to do so would injure them or others. What is my motive? Now, if I can come up and make amends to you and not hurt you by doing it or people around you, then my motive is right. But if I go over there to help you and don't care how you it affects you and people around you, then my motive is wrong. And, mister, you better be careful. There's times in my life, believe me, when I've had to tell white lies because I knew what damage would be done if I will try to be that honest. So here I found out in those first fourth to the ninth step that I could forgive me for all the things I did to me that I've been blaming you for all my life. The 10th, 11th, and 12th steps are now going to teach me what I have to do with Amy since I know who I am and what I'm like. 10th step says continue to take personal inventory. When you're wrong, promptly admit it. I do it every night of my life. to bed tonight, and I've had a nice day as I've had it coming up here to see you people. I said, thank you, Papa, for letting me have a nice day, and I go to sleep. If I have a lousy day, I say, hey, Pop, I screwed up. I acted like an ass. Forgive me, and I go to sleep. And I'll tell you why I say that. He's already forgiven me, right? But he wants me to admit it out loud to me that I hear it, that I screwed up and acted like an ass. That's all. And there's another factor in here. It took me 9 steps to clear the wreckage of my past. I'm going to clear the wreckage every night so I don't have to wake up tomorrow morning with it. I'm going to start out fresh. I don't want to build a wreckage of the future. And I'll tell you a funny thing. People may not know it. I don't know how long you're on the program. But do you know that you are making amends to everyone in this room right now by not acting like you used to? Isn't that nice? You've still got to make amends to people in the future by being the person you're supposed to be. The gift you get here is a simple gift. I can look at all you people and say, I love you because you are you. Not the way I want you to be and not the way I expect you to be. I love you because you are you. I've accepted you as you are. Because I've finally accepted me as I am. That I'm good and I'm bad. There's a little boy in me and there's a big boy. They're always fighting. I gotta keep them in balance. 11th step says, sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God. Praying only for knowledge of His will for me and the power to carry it out. Did it tell me to pray for you people? No. Did it tell me to pray for Amy? No. It said, sought through prayer and meditation to improve my conscious contact with God. Praying only for knowledge of His will for me and the power to carry it out. Spiritual maturity is when I am not dependent on people, places, or things for my happiness. I need you people. You need me. The minute I become dependent on you, I've made you my God. The first commandment says, I shall not have any false gods before me. When I took all the love you people from you and gave you nothing back in return, aren't I stealing? And through my dirty actions, haven't I killed all the love you had for me? And people say, talk about adultery, and right away they think of sex. Go look in the dictionary. The word means unfaithful, too. I have to earn the right to be called a mother, a boy, a man, a son, and a father. You have to earn the right to be called a woman, a mother, and a daughter. You have to earn this right. It's not given to you. That's your self-esteem. When I fulfill that, aren't I honoring my mother and father? See, there's nothing new. Only they sympathized for me to understand how to live with it. And that's all this program is teaching me, is how to live with it. I'm as rich as anybody in this world. I live on Social Security. I'm healthy. I've got arthritis in my arches. I can't walk more than a block and a half, and I've got to stop and rest for a minute. But I never think it up here. You know why? You people make me keep me young. You keep me young. I've accepted it, but I still think young. Because you keep me coming back. Look, man, Beverly Hills, he goes to psychiatrist and pays $200 an hour to lie to him. So I've already got him beat. See? I got a dollar in my pocket. I do everything I want to do. I have to do it in moderation, but I still do it. What difference of eating a McDonald's hamburger or pay out $2 to $8 for it? Still hamburger. Only thing is, I got to remember, once in a while I'll dress up so I pay that $8. I got to never forget it's still hamburger. That's what I'm paying for, is a dress up. They may live in a 20-room mansion. They can only sleep in one bed the same as me. They may have 20 Rolls Royce. They can only drive one car the same as me. So what is my needs? See, when we learn, the wants of the little boy in me that wants, the big boy says, what are your needs? Today, I don't say I do it 100%. But there's days I want something and I'll buy it, even though it's going to cost me, you know. But I always ask myself one simple question. Do you need it or do you want it? If I don't need it, I don't buy it. and I never do anything today unless it's my pleasure. Because the minute I do it to please you, I want something back. Don't you remember all your life we're all people pleasers? Every one of us. We always wanted to please everybody else so they'd love us and like us and understand us. And when they didn't give it back to us in return, we felt hurt, rejected. There's an old proverb, today, do unto others as you want them to do unto you. It's the biggest fallacy I ever heard in my life. Do unto others as you would do unto yourself. In other words, they're telling me, hey, you practice empty posts on yourself for a change. All my life I've been polite, kind, and considerate to you, never giving a damn about me. Now I'm practicing that on me. I'm trying to be a little kinder to Evie, a little polite to Evie, a little considerate to Evie for a change. And there's only two answers to any question, yes or no. If you add one more word to it, you're lying. Because now you have to justify it. And they'll ask you another one. Now you got to justify that. First thing you know, you're in a fight. One day my wife wanted me to do something. I said, I don't want to do it. You're selfish. You don't love me. I said, you're right. You want to stop a conversation? Just agree with him. Just agree with him. Whatever they say, I'm mad to get you right. What can they say? You didn't answer him. You disagreed with him. Man, does that frustrate him? Now we come to the 12th step, which is a beautiful step. Having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to others and to practice these principles in all our affairs. Everybody in this room is making a 12-step call on each other. The only thing I say, do what makes you comfortable on this program. Fortunately, I love to speak. There's some people who like to talk on a one-on-one basis. Some people like Lori and the rest of them would like to be on committees. Some people like to lead meetings. All I say is, be active. Get into something. Because all of us can't be all those things. Like one time they wanted me to be a program chairman at the convention in San Fernando. I said, no way you're going to get me to be one. They said, why? I said, I know what a bossy bastard I am. And I'll wind up trying to get everybody to do it my way. And if they don't do it, I'm going to wind up doing it all anyway. So the hell with you. I'll do anything you want, but I ain't because I know me that I didn't know before. Oh, yes, I'll be that. And then make myself miserable. Today, I enjoy being miserable. That may sound funny to you, but it's true. Because if you didn't enjoy it, you'd do something about it, wouldn't you? So why not have fun when you have it? See, there's days I'm going to be miserable. There's days I don't care what I do is going to be wrong. That's a polite way of telling me, maybe try to get by as cheap as can because whatever you do is going to be wrong. That tells me to be quiet, take it easy. And I'll guarantee you, watch this happen if it don't happen in your family. There's days when I feel good, my wife feels lousy, and I put up with her crap. There's days when she feels good and I feel lousy, she puts up with my crap. I can make it better at least once a month. We both feel lousy at the same time and all hell breaks loose. Just as my God makes green apples, that's going to happen. It's as normal as anything we do. And you know what love is? One simple word, trust. If you don't trust your husband or your wife, you don't love them. Don't love them. The other thing you'll learn is for me to get along with my wife, I got to get along with her defects of character, she has to get along with mine. See, I can get along with my wife, she's sweet. But how do I get along with her when she's a bastard? And how does she get along with me when I'm a bastard? We learn to accept each other. There's many things about me that my wife can't stand, and I can't stand a lot of things about her, but that's all right, we accepted it. Yeah. But not us, we want perfection. We want that illusion we dreamed of. You know something, you women and fellas, when you first got married, you knew what your husband did. Did any of his wear curlers when you met him at the door to go out? And did he come in jeans and all worn dirty? You always wanted to show the good side, right? You knew some of his bad faults, but it'll change when we get married. It'll change when we get married. He loves me. Ooh, what an illusion. What an illusion. In the 12 steps, it says something. It says, many of us exclaim, what an order, I can't go through with it. Do not be discouraged. No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We are not saints. Point is, we are willing to grow along spiritual lines. The principles we have set down are guides to progress. We claim spiritual progress rather than spiritual perfection. Here's where the old man is telling me for the last time, my son, I am the only perfect person. All I want you to do today is try to be a good person to the best of your ability. And believe me, there's days when I'm only that good. But I know he don't care. As long as I'm willing to be even that good, he's perfectly satisfied. So see, don't get discouraged. He don't expect perfect. He's the only one that's perfect. Tell you how smart he is. He says, my son, I'm going to give you a gift I give to no other animals. I'll take care of all my other animals. I'm going to put a brain in your head, and I'm going to let you decide whether you want to be miserable or happy. So don't blame me. And you know something? None of us knows how this program works. All I know is it works, and how I can prove that. 10 years ago, I was one of the six that started an AA group at 9 o'clock in our meeting. Today, they have 80 people there every morning. When I came on the program, there was 10 groups, and only 10 meetings a week in Southern California. Now, that's covering all of Southern California. Today, in the Los Angeles area, there's 1,700 AA meetings a week, and there's at least 500 Al-Anon meetings a week. And you're going to question it? How can you question it? But still, you ask them how it works, nobody can tell you. Did you ever stop and think of simple things? Every idea is a spiritual thought. And every idea that's a spiritual thought created everything material that we have in this world today. But you can't take anything material and make spiritual. So the old man, as I was learning this program, this one guy walked to him, Jim, about 35 years ago. I said, how do you work the program, Jim? He said, sit down, I'll show you. Well, I said, another guy's going to teach me, because I went around asking everybody till I got in my mind what I thought was a step that I understood it well enough before I went to the next step of growth. He said, I'm going to take you through the steps backwards. And I thought the guy was absolutely crazy. He says, Amy, having had a spiritual awakening as a result of these steps, how can you take that step until you understand the 11th all through prayer and meditation? And how can you take the 11th step until you understand the 10th, continue to take personal inventory? And how can you take the 10th step until you understand the 9th, make direct amends to such people? And how can you take that 9th step until you understand the 8th, make a list of all people you've harmed? And how can you take that 8th step until you understand the 7th, humbly asking to remove? And how can you take that 7th step until you understand the 6th that you're entirely ready to have God do it? And how can you take that 6th step until you understand the 5th, admit God to yourself and to another human being? And how can you take that 5th step until you understand the 4th, made a searching, fearless, moral inventory? And how can you take that 4th step until you understand the 3rd, made a decision to turn your will and your life over? And how can you take that 3rd step until you understand the 2nd, came to believe that a power greater yourself can restore your sanity? And how can you take that 2nd step until you understand the 1st? That your power is over alcohol and your life has become unmanageable. So you see, Amy, no matter which way you work it, if you don't take the 1st step, it won't work. And that I found to be true. I have something here that I think is the 12 steps in a nice way of had it to support. It says, to laugh is to risk appearing a fool. To weep is risk appearing being sentimental. To reach out for another is to risk involvement. To expose feelings is the risk exposing our true self. To place your ideas and your dreams before the crowd is to risk loss. To love is to risk not being loved in return. To live is to risk dying. To hope is to risk despair. To try it all is to risk failure. But to risk we must, because the greatest hazard in life is to risk nothing. The man and woman who risks nothing does nothing and has nothing. Thank you for letting me speak to you.